Wolfgang, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good, man. Thank you for joining me on a Friday evening right after work.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, I was going to start off, you know, you're the first Wolfgang. I've been on this planet for 41 years. I lived in Germany. I was stationed in Germany. I never met a Wolfgang.
You know, I'm kind of surprised you didn't meet one when you were in Germany.
Yeah.
It's a pretty common name in Germany.
Correct. I mean, you know, you always read about them, always heard about them. You see them on TV, Wolfgang Puck, that is, you know, and but you're the first. So I appreciate you, you know, just allowing me to meet you.
Yeah, like I said, I appreciate you inviting me to be on your podcast.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you're a supporter of what I support, but you have a bigger role than I do. I put kids on blast. You support them and pretty much the organization or in that chapter. So, and what I'm talking about is you're the vice president of the local junior rodeo.
Yep.
Which is really cool. And I want to talk about that, but you're a former bullfighter. Yep. Like I said, you guys are athletes. A lot of people say you're not. All you do is just dodge a bull. I think that's hogwash. They'd never seen somebody on the dirt like you, Roy, you know, Dusty, you know, the big guys or even the small guys.
Well, yeah. But I mean, if you haven't experienced it, then I think you should. Personally, I think you should give it a try.
Yeah, exactly. So I always try to, you know, tell them, like, hey, don't knock it until you see it because those boys are bad. And then you got Bow Hunter on your resume.
Yep.
I'm going to touch space on that.
Okay.
So talk about your rodeo life, man. When did it start?
So I started the first time I ever entered the mutton bust and I was 2 years old. And I got on my sheep that day. The sheep rolled over on top of me. And I actually ended up, our local news channel at the time had what they called the Amateur Athlete of the Week. Yeah. And I actually was awarded with the Amateur Athlete of the Week at 2 years old. I made the news. I had an interview with the sportscaster and everything at the time. And then after that, it kind of took off. I mean, I think I entered three rodeos a year when I was younger, like that, like from the ages of 2 to 6. And then after that, I think I was 7 years old when I got on my first calf, which is the next step above the sheep riding. And I ended up winning that rodeo in the calf riding, my first time ever doing that. And so I grew up all the way through the ranks, calf riding, steer riding, junior bull riding. And then when I was 13, I think I entered my first open bull riding. That definitely 13. Didn't go 13. That definitely didn't go the way I wanted it to, but I had to try, had to see, you know, kind of where my skill level was at compared to the big guys. And
yeah.
So I kind of fell back into the junior bull riding for another year and then started entering all the open bull ridings when I was 14. I won a couple of junior rodeos in California, a couple of them in Oregon, here where I'm from. And then when I was 15, I realized that I was too tall. I'm too big of a guy to really be a bull rider. Like, you know, Lane Vaughn, he's 6 foot tall, but he's a pretty skinny kid. Like he's smaller. He's tall, but he's got a small frame. So, I mean, he makes it work and he makes it work very well.
Yes.
But, true. So I talked to a friend of mine that was a bullfighter and I just told him, I said, hey man, I want to give this a try. What do I have to do?
Yeah.
And he said, well, obviously talk to your parents first. You know, you're 15 years old. So talk to your parents, make sure they're okay with it, and then call me back. So I talked to my parents and I called him the next day and he said, well, we're about 3 weeks away from this amateur rodeo in Chiloquin, Oregon. He said, if you want to come over and fight bulls with me there, try it out. Well, let's go. He said, sounds good. I'm entered in the bull riding there anyway.
Yeah.
So that day I rode my bull first. They let me go first because I was fighting bulls after that, and rode my bull, went and changed, and then ran out in the arena. And I was the first time I tried bullfighting, and man, that first bull, I was addicted.
Yeah.
That was just an adrenaline rush like I'd never had before.
Love at first sight, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that was, again, that was when I was 15. And then I fought a lot of amateur rodeos and junior rodeos here in the Pacific Northwest. And I just happened to, one of my friends was a good friend with somebody that was in the PBR. Mm-hmm. And he introduced me to him and he asked me, he goes, "You want to fight bulls in the PBR?" And I said, "Well, I mean, that's everybody's dream."
Right.
And he goes, "Well, I got a touring pro event," they were called at the time, "coming up in Bakersfield, California." He goes, "If you want to come down and fight bulls down there, you're absolutely more than welcome." And I said, "That sounds great. What do I need to do to get my card?" And at that time, he said, "You don't need your card. You come down, you fight one, and basically it's your evaluation. So
yeah,
we'll give you your card after that if we think you're worthy." And so I went down there, I rode down with him, and we talked the whole way, and I fought bulls that night. And I got my card right after that, and I fought bulls professionally for 4 years.
Okay.
The PBR Touring Pros and the Velocity Tours.
Nice. Okay.
So it was right about a 4 year run that I had in the professional ranks in the PBR. And man, those shows are just something else. They were a good time.
What, besides mutton busting, what kept you in the game?
So two of my older brothers, one of them started, I think he was 13. He told my dad one day he wanted to enter the steer riding at the local junior rodeo. And then he went on. He was a PRCA bull rider, Columbia River Circuit finalist. I think he rode in one PBR event, I believe. But there was him and then another brother that's kind of right in the middle of me and him and the family. Mm-hmm. And he rode bulls too. So it was just, I wanted to be like my older brothers. Like they were setting an example for me. And that's what I wanted to do too when I was younger. And my dad grew up down around Oakdale, California, yep, cowboy capital of the world.
Yep.
I mean, he never rodeoed. He never rode bulls or anything like that. But it was always just kind of in our nature because he always talked about it. The old days at the Oakdale rodeo and working in the back pens and stuff like that. So it wasn't like we carried on his rodeo legacy, but we kind of started our own.
Yeah. Do you miss it?
I do.
Yeah,
I do. I miss it quite a bit sometimes, but you know, I've got a wife and two kids now, and you know, it's just, it is a dangerous game.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, if you're not 100%, if your heart's not 100% in it, it can go real bad, real fast. So
yeah.
Once I got married, knew we had our first kid on the way, I just, that's where my heart went, was I got a family now. I got to look after more than just me. So I decided to call it a career at that point.
Is it tough to be a spectator
in
the crowd? Yeah.
Very. Yeah, like I say, I grew up doing it since I was 2 years old, yeah, just as either a contestant in one of the events or as a bullfighter. And it's hard for me, but I still try and go and, you know, support everybody else, support the young guys that are coming up. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're out of it physically, but mentally, emotionally, I mean, you're there because you're helping these young kids, progress in the ranks. And I don't know what chapter or where are you located? Is it all of Southern Oregon you're part of, or does that work?
So the Southern Oregon Junior Rodeo Association that I'm the vice president of right now, we just have our own rodeo here in Central Point, Oregon.
Okay.
But we try and work in conjunction with other junior rodeos. Like, mm-hmm, I think it's Klamath Falls is a 1 day event on a Saturday. Don't quote me on that. It's a 1 day event for the weekend and we're on the other day for the weekend. So we're about an hour away from Klamath Falls. So whenever these kids come from out of town, out of state or whatever, they can come to one on a Saturday and then go to the other one on Sunday and just make a whole weekend of it.
I want to give you credit, man. I know you miss it. I know you want to be out there, but man, what you're doing to these kids and for these kids and the families, man, is huge. I just want you to know that, man. I think you're the MVP, man. You know, these kids that are coming up, especially at CCT and, you know, the local rodeos up here, mm-hmm. we hear them. And every time I hear Klamath Falls, I'm like, wow, okay. But you have to do something with that, you know, and all those kids in Southern Oregon that are coming up. So yeah. I don't know. Man. I mean,
it seemed right to me when I was offered the position as vice president, because I mean, when I was a kid, when I was first starting out and as I worked my way up through the ranks, you know, it was those old retired guys that were carrying on the rodeo for me and the rest of us that were that age and coming up. So I felt like it was time to kind of let them pass the torch and take my place where I needed to be.
You going to stick with it?
I think so. I mean, we're just like anything else, you know, a committee, we're good for 4 years. And then the entire committee can either choose to vote us back in for another 4 years or vote in a new, sorry, I'm having a hard time thinking of the word I'm looking for right now, but the main, like the president and the vice president. I mean, honestly, it's just kind of like the presidency.
Yeah. Like the board.
Yeah. You're voted in for 4 years and then you can either get another four or they'll put somebody else in the place.
Would you ever have your kids do it? Join the rodeo lifestyle?
That's a tough one because I want to, but at the same time, man, I know what my parents went through a couple of times and I don't know if I'd be ready to go through that or not.
How many bones have you broken, man?
To my knowledge, yeah. Not a one.
Really?
Yeah.
You lucked out, so, man.
There was a 4th of July weekend, 2014. I had a PBR Velocity Tour event in Carson, California. That was a 2-day show. Saturday went incredibly well. And then Sunday, man, it was one of the first, I think it was one of the first five bulls out. I kind of got in a bad spot, got flat footed. He knocked me down and stepped on my leg, which I mean, I'd been stepped on hundreds of times over my rodeo career and never thought anything of it. So it was definitely sore. It was tender. There was some serious swelling, but I mean, it's your job as a bullfighter. That's your job. You got to keep going. Those guys are depending on you. So I finished out the show. I got on a plane that night and flew home. And then the next afternoon, something wasn't right in my leg. And I went to the ER, you know, we did a x-ray, some other stuff. And the doctor came in and he goes, when did this happen? I said, well, this was, you know, Sunday afternoon. And he goes, well, you have a very severe hematoma in your thigh. He goes, it must have clotted up. I don't know how you made it this long, but it ruptured. So we got to get you into surgery now. So that was the worst injury I ever had.
Okay.
I know a couple guys that have had them too. And but as far as bones, I don't think I ever broke a bone riding bulls.
Okay.
I had a very lucky career, honestly, in that aspect.
Okay. How many people have you trained? How many bullfighters have you trained? I know one.
You know one of them. So when Roy started, you know, we pretty much just partnered up right then, and anywhere I could take him with me, he came with me. And honestly, I think a majority of his talent, that credit should go to Rowdy Berry. I went with him to that school. He went to a Rowdy's in Washington and hung out with him. I had a bull riding that weekend in Washington anyway.
Yeah.
So I went with him to that school. And I mean, Rowdy's a great guy. Rowdy was a heck of a bullfighter. He helped Roy out a lot. And I mean, honestly, I just kind of helped Roy fine tune what he learned elsewhere. And we had a blast traveling together and fighting bulls together.
Yeah. Rowdy and that family, man, they're one of a kind. They're like the nicest people, man. And then you meet Roy, you're like, dang, what is this? Is this like Is it rubbing off? Is Barry, Mr. Barry gone, you know, rubbing off on these guys? But man, yeah, him is old.
Oh, I was going to say, I met Roy right about the time I started fighting bulls. He was still riding bulls. I think he was, I want to say he was around 13 at the time. And I mean, we just, my family became good friends with his family. So, I mean, we pretty much grew up together from our teenage years on, and we had a lot of good times on the road. And that, honestly, I think I miss the traveling with my buddies more than I actually miss fighting bulls.
Right. Okay. All right. Who's your favorite bullfighter, man?
Are we talking freestyle or cowboy protection?
Let's go freestyle.
You want to go freestyle? I'd have to say Weston Rutkowski. That guy is, he's a hand. He's incredible at what he does.
Let's go protection.
Protection, that's a tough one for me. You know, I grew up watching Rob Smets and Frank Newsom and Dusty Tuckness. And I mean, those guys are just, they're the best of the best. You don't get any better than those guys. And okay. Currently, I don't know. I think I'd have to say Cody Webster.
Cody,
that guy is just the natural talent that guy has. And I mean, he grew up down there with Frank Newsom, and that guy's just, he started at a very young age and he just had a natural talent for it.
Yeah. And you know, Del Brisby, he's one of his buddies too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So, you know, he gets extra fame, man, you know, best cowboy in the world, I guess.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Super puncher. Not just a cowboy, he's a super puncher.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. All right, bull rider.
You know, I think all time. I think I'd have to say Troy Dunn. Back in the old PBR days, the Australian. Yeah.
Okay.
I think all time he was my favorite.
Okay. Right now.
I think I'd have to say Cade Madsen.
Man, that boy's bad.
You just had him on here not too long ago. And man, he is something else.
That boy is bad. Like, I am serious. I was surprised that he even acknowledged me and said, yeah, I'll be on. I'm like, for real?
Yeah. Yeah, no. And I mean, I listened to that podcast when it came out, and man, I gained even more respect for that kid.
Yeah. He's a competitor, man. He is.
And I mean, just a down to earth, great kid. Like, like I say, I gained so much more respect for him. Like, it's just, he's a great guy. He rides bulls incredibly well. And I don't know how he couldn't be somebody's favorite.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I was going to ask you, CCT, man, which one's your favorite? And never mind. But you know, I was at the Prineville show, and I'm like, man, that guy looks familiar. I know Cade was there, and I know somebody drives them, either his dad, you know, maybe his brother every now and then. I'm like, that guy looks familiar. He has this like swagger walk to him, this cowboy in denim, you know. I'm like, that has to be Briggs. I'm like, nah, that's not his brother. Come to find out, it's his brother, man. I was like, what? Yeah. I was like, Cade, your brother was there? He's like, yeah. He already walked out. I was like, hey, if he's down to walk back, because I guess he just broke his foot, I'll have him come back in. And nah. But dude, I was like, God, I'd let him walk away, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, that family's one of a kind, man.
Absolutely. They sound like a great bunch of people. And it's hard to find anymore, really. Like a family that's just that close and that tight. And, you know, like, dad supports both the boys in the bull riding, and it's
okay. That's good that you said Cade, man. And now I'm not going to ask you about the junior boys, because hey, all those boys are butt, man. They kick butt, dude. And I talked to them on the side, and they're like, because I asked them about Texas and Utah, and they're like, I could have won. I won the first day. Yeah. And I'm like, dude, but how many Oregon boys were out there in Texas and Utah? None. I was like, there you go. Hold your head up high. Oh, I got seventh.
But you were the only one there.
Exactly.
You were the only one there from the state of Oregon.
Exactly. You represent, you earned that spot. Exactly. So it's pretty cool to be a coach at a high school and then see these boys and you know, just get to know them more and just root them on, even though, you know, they didn't make 8 seconds, but they don't see my grown butt doing that stuff, you know?
And so, well, and I mean, like, honestly, I mean, Wyatt Davis, like that kid, I think he just graduated from the junior bull riding to the open bull riding at the CCTs. Yeah. And man, that kid, he's getting pretty handy. He's moving up real quick.
He's tough. He hurt his hand, but man, I saw that. I was like,
that's oh yeah. Nasty. He'll be back though.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he'll be on there tomorrow with his dad in Heppner. Yep. So, all right. So let's go to being the vice president, man, junior. You're paying it forward.
Yeah. I mean, that's, like I said, there was a committee when I started in the junior rodeo, and it was my time to take that position and pay it forward to the next generation of rodeo stars that are up and coming. So it's been a little bit of a battle. I mean, COVID hit us pretty hard. It was very tough to have any kind of a public event. And I mean, that made it tough. So we haven't had a rodeo for 2 years now. But now that all that's kind of behind us, we're moving forward. We've made some really good progress this year, and we're going to have our rodeo in August.
Okay. And where's that rodeo?
That's here in Central Point, Oregon.
Okay.
Same place as the CCT finals.
Okay. All right. Yeah. The fairgrounds, Jacksonville, right?
Yep. Jackson County.
Yeah. Jackson County. Okay. Does it get crowded? Is it a big crowd there?
The junior rodeos are kind of tough. I mean, it's hard to draw a crowd to the junior rodeos. I don't know why, but most of the spectators are just parents of the kids that are entered. That's, I mean, nice. We do our best. We try and get, you know, a good crowd for the kids just because it's a good thing for them, but it's tough. It's tough getting a good crowd for a junior rodeo. We definitely don't pack the place like the CCT does for the finals or the Wild Rogue Pro Rodeo in May, but we do our best. We do everything we can for the kids and just get them used to it. Really. I mean, that's the best thing you can do for the young kids is get them used to the crowds, get them used to everything going on. Cause if they, at a young age, if you can learn to calm your nerves when you're that young, if you have a big crowd, it's so much easier once you hit those bigger events. Cause I'll definitely say, like, when I fought that first PBR in Bakersfield, California, that show was sold out that night. And that was my first time in front of a big crowd. And man, it was tough. It was hard to get my nerves under control. But once I did, man, basically the crowd just disappeared.
Okay.
And then I was just back in my element, and it was great. After that, I never had another problem again, really, with the anxiety of being in front of so many people.
Besides bullfighting and bull riding, what has always been your event to watch? You stopped everything and you watched it.
My favorite one, saddle bronc riding.
Okay, saddle bronc. Okay.
Yep. It's always been, I mean, even when I was younger, saddle bronc was just, it was something I always wanted to try, but I never really committed to trying it. I never got on a saddle bronc horse, but it was definitely one of my favorite events to watch. And then right about the time Roy started fighting bulls with me, actually, I went to work for a stock contractor in California, and all he had was bronc horses, barebacks and saddle broncs. So he'd sub out, I guess you could call it, for the bulls, but I'd go down, I'd grab Roy. We'd go down there, hook up to a stock trailer, whether it was roping steers or saddle bronc horses or whatever. And I'd hook up to a trailer with my truck, load up, and we'd head further south from Red Bluff and just go rodeo.
Who has the better adult cowboys, man, bull riders, Washington or Oregon?
I gotta say Oregon. But
you guys,
no, there's
got some good ones, man.
Both states definitely have some good ones. Absolutely. Like, there's no doubt about it. The Pacific Northwest, really. I mean, there's a lot of really good up and coming bull riders around here.
Yes. And is it me, since you grew up, I grew up in, well, I went to college in Klamath Falls and know of the rodeo scene. It wasn't quite big, but have you noticed the growth in the past 10, 15 years in this area?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was one point that it kind of seemed like it was starting to taper off.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just like anything else, you know, it's kind of become popular and kind of fall off a little bit and then come right back. But there's definitely like, even so, when I was growing up, there was cowboys everywhere, bull riders everywhere. I mean, everything my older brothers entered, you had to call and enter within the first 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Otherwise all the spots were filled and you were being put on a waiting list for all the rough stock events. So it was definitely a big thing when I started. And then when I started fighting bulls, it kind of tapered off a little bit. I mean, we'd get 10, 20 bull riders for an event if we were lucky in the open amateur shows. But I've definitely noticed it pick back up in the last, honestly, I'd say about 5 years, it's kind of ramped up again. And there's like 10 years ago, I think was right about when I met Derek Kolbaba.
Okay.
And that kid, like, he's one of the ones that, like I said, Cade's probably my favorite right now, but Derek's definitely a close second.
Yep. Walla Walla boy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, with, you know, the fading in and out, the crowds and everything, do you see this fading? Because man, I think it's at an all time high.
I think it's at an all time high right now. And I don't think we'll have to worry about it fading again between the popularity that the PBR has built for bull riding. And I mean, honestly, in the Pacific Northwest, you know, Jason with the CCT, man, he's built an incredible thing here in the Pacific Northwest. And I don't think we'll have to worry about it fading again.
No.
And then, I mean, you got for bullfighters, freestyle bullfighters, you got the BFO and the UBF and those events. I mean, I don't think it's ever anything that's really going to fade off again. I think we're just going to get a lot more guys interested in it.
Well, that's when you come around, man, with the junior, you know, the talent there, especially in the CCT, you see it and you play a huge role in that.
Oh yeah. Those younger kids from Klamath Falls, like Lane Vaughn and Wyatt Davis and those guys, you know, I was fighting bulls when they were just getting started.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite things, honestly, was to watch them start in the calf riding and just work their way up to where they're at now. I mean, that's one of my favorite parts of rodeo, is being able to just watch these young kids start from scratch and just work their way up and just have the talent that they do now.
Oh yeah. Progression, man. I see it every time I watch them. It's crazy. Oh, yeah.
And I'm proud to be any kind of a part of their career.
Why do you think the rodeo scene has gotten bigger besides PBR? Do you think it's because the Western tradition, the put your boots on, work hard, do what you're supposed to do? They don't really talk much. They perform, they do the business, and then they're done.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of people that are getting more into that Western tradition now. And I mean, I don't know what to give the credit to for the new exposure and the growth and the community being more involved in it now, but it's definitely coming back and it's growing at a rapid pace.
Yeah. So I listen to other podcasts barely, and a lot of people contribute Yellowstone for it, man. And it's just like,
And that, you know, I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I've never seen a single episode of that.
Same. I haven't.
I grew up in the cowboy world and the cowboy lifestyle, and there's just, I don't know. It's not something that really grabs me and makes me want to watch it.
Right.
Just because I've already lived that. I've been there. I grew up on a working cattle ranch when I was, I mean, that's pretty much where I was born, was on a working cattle ranch. So that's the lifestyle I had.
Okay. Now, rodeo, bullfighting, you had to stop. Old lady said so. Two kids. I have three kids. Mm-hmm. I have old lady too for 17 years. I'm old, so I do whatever, you know, she says. She tells me to jump. I say, how high? right?
Yeah, smart man. Smart man.
Right? Exactly. Well, it's because I was ex-military too. So, you know, something had to kick in, but
yeah.
You're a bow hunter.
Real quick, I just want to say thanks for your service. I appreciate that.
No problem, man. No problem. The lady, you know, she said it. You bow hunt now. You took all your energy into being a you know, being a bullfighter and everything else to a family man and bow hunter, right?
Yep.
Does that fulfill that urge, that adrenaline rush that you once had fighting bulls?
Most of the time, absolutely. So I got into bow hunting. I mean, when I turned 18, I didn't really grow up hunting or anything. My dad and I, we'd go fishing and, you know, bass and trout fishing. We'd go do that together, but he didn't really hunt. And then when I turned 18, I got my hunting license and a deer tag, and I rifle hunted then. I didn't really take it very seriously. You know, if I go out with my brother, maybe we'll see a buck and maybe we won't. It was just a good way to spend time with my brother. And then fast forward through the rest of my rodeo career, and I kept rifle hunting, but it was still something I didn't really take seriously. You know, it was something to do on the weekends. It was a hobby. And then 2019, my boss at the time, he was talking about, he was getting ready to go bow hunt black bear. And I was like, man, I've always thought about bow hunting and, you know, bow hunting a bear. That sounds like quite the rush. So I talked to him a little bit. He actually bought me my first bow and that same year. So that was in the spring of 2019, that same year in September, which is archery elk season. I harvested my first 6x6 bull elk. Okay. And man, that was, so that bull, he came in and he was at 12 yards and I executed a perfect shot. And man, I was hooked after that. To have an animal like that come in that close, man, that definitely fulfilled the adrenaline rush that I had been missing. Cause there was a couple year kind of lull in there that I didn't have anything to really fill that in.
Yeah.
And then I did that. That was it. I was hooked. But then the following spring, I got lucky. I drew my spring bear tag and I ended up killing a 350-pound boar at 30 yards. And that was, man, I thought that elk was an adrenaline rush. That was something else. So that's definitely where it started filling in the lack of the adrenaline rush that I craved so bad. So after that, that was it for me. You know, I work Monday through Friday and hang out with my family as much as possible. They come first before anything else. But man, when hunting season rolls around, that's just my new passion. That's my new adrenaline rush.
Yeah. You highlight that a lot on your Instagram page. It's hunting. And, yep. Like what do you enjoy most, bear or elk?
Elk is definitely my favorite.
Because they're so elusive.
They are definitely a smart and coy animal. I mean, they are very, very hard to hunt because, I mean, you think about an elk and basically they're hunted 365 days a year by all of our apex predators. You know, you got cougars, you got wolves, calving season, the black bears, you can get in there. And I mean, they're a hard animal to hunt just because they're hunted by some of the sneakiest predators you can possibly imagine. So they're on edge all the time. And like rifle hunting. So, I mean, rifle hunting, you get within 100 yards of your target animal. And I mean, it's basically a done deal. Because if you have a good rest and you're, you know, basically all you got to do is just pull up and pull the trigger. But bow hunting 100 yards, that's where the hunt truly starts because you have to get within that animal's red zone. And to outsmart that animal, whether it be an elk or a deer or a bear, bear's a little bit easier because they have a real hard time seeing. So as long as you can be quiet and keep the wind in your favor, they're a little bit easier to hunt. But man, to get within the red zone of an elk, which I consider to be 40 yards or less, that's the challenge in itself.
Man, it has to be wild to hunt a bear though. Like just, you know, they're the apex predator when we were in the woods, you know, and then just to do what you do with them it's just like, yes. And
it can be tough. Like there's some times that my mind will start playing with me and you know that he is a predator, but black bears, they're not really aggressive towards people. They're really more afraid of you than you are of them. And I mean, I've got a couple neighbors. There's one of them, he owns a bow shop right up the road from me. He was actually attacked by a black bear.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is possible, but it's not likely.
You put a baby cub there with mama. I'm sure she'll take care of business.
Oh yeah. You don't step between mom and her cub.
Yeah. I'm out in the wilderness a lot, man. Last thing I want to do is come around a bear, especially 20 miles into the trek, you know? Mm-mm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially like we talked the other day, you know, you were talking about training for your 100 mile or.
Yes.
I don't know where that's at, but I know I've listened to some of Cameron Haynes' podcasts and, you know, he's talked about his 100 milers that are all over the place. And, you know, some of the warnings, if you will, in the paperwork for the race says like you understand that you could be in contact with these animals and these predators. And it's definitely a rush. Black bear is definitely an adrenaline rush, because no matter what, like my goal is to harvest that animal and put that meat in my freezer to feed my family. True. But in the back of my mind, there's always with a bear, there's always that question of like, what if?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you use the bear grease? I heard that the people talk about that. Like Steve Rinella, man, he talks about that bear grease. Like,
yeah. So that's something I've never done. So I've been bow hunting for 4 years now. So it's a pretty short career so far for me, but I've killed 2 bears, and honestly, the 2 that I've been successful on didn't really have enough fat to try and render into oil or grease or.
Yeah.
So it's something I haven't tried yet, but it's on my list of things to do.
Are you still eating that elk?
Oh yeah. The one from last year. Oh yeah. So last year was my most successful season so far. As far as bow hunting goes, like I think they say you have a 10% success rate on elk, especially. So for one guy, that's 1 elk every 10 years, or 1 out of every 10 guys gets a bull a year. Right now I'm sitting at 75%. I've been bow hunting for 4 years. I've been successful on 3 bull elk.
Okay.
So that's, and then last year was what I called my triple crown. So springtime, I drew my bear tag. I ended up with my spring bear. I got a 5-point raghorn bull, and then I ended up with a blacktail buck as well.
Okay.
So that was definitely, so far, that's been my highlight year as a bow hunter.
You got meat for years, huh?
No, not really, you know, because we try not to buy any of our meat at the grocery store. My wife, she raises chickens, meat chickens and stuff like that. So we get our chicken that way. And then she hunts as well. She's been pretty successful on deer the last few years. And, but between, you know, the 4 of us as a family, that it doesn't last near as long as you'd think it would.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Right. So that elk was in September, because that's archery elk season, and we're getting pretty low on elk, and we're probably about halfway through the deer as well.
How much meat in pounds did you get from that elk?
So I didn't actually weigh it out. We do all of our own butchering too. I mean, we take care of everything at home from start to finish. I mean, we do it all. But I want to say there was probably close to 300 pounds of meat off of that elk.
Good God.
Okay. Probably, because I mean, elk are huge animals. That bull this year, he was probably 900 pounds on the hoof. So the first one I got, he was probably close to 1150.
Okay.
So, but I mean, it really puts into perspective, you know, between the hide, the head, the horns, and everything else, you know, they're huge animals, but realistically, the way I see it, you're basically getting a third of that animal is what you're going to be able to process and feed your family.
Okay. What is the number one hunt you want, man, that you haven't had yet? What's the trophy?
My ultimate dream hunt would be red stag in New Zealand.
New Zealand red stag. Okay.
That would be my ultimate dream hunt. Right now I've got a friend in Colorado. I met him a few years ago and we've been trying to coordinate an elk hunt in Colorado together. Cause I mean, so there's multiple different subspecies of elk. Like where I'm at, we hunt the Roosevelt elk, Eastern Oregon, you got the Rockies. So that's something I've always wanted to do was hunt Rocky Mountain elk. Just, you know, something to change it up. They're the same animal no matter what. But so we've been trying to coordinate an elk hunt together and go actually hunt Rocky Mountain elk in the Rockies in Colorado. And nice. I think we're getting close. We'll probably happen in the next couple of years. Okay. Utah, I'd love to go elk hunt in Utah, but I got to build up some more points before I can draw the tags that I really want in Utah. So I've still got a few years to get to where I'm really going on any out of state hunts, but I mean, it's working for me right now to just hunt right here at home and definitely taking care of the family with local
75%. I mean, geez, yep.
I didn't really realize that until I was listening to a podcast. I think it was about 6 months ago and it was Cameron Haynes. It was one of his old podcasts, but he was the one that said it. He goes, you know, elk hunting, you got 10% success rate. And I thought about it and I was like, well, right now I'm at about 66. And then I got my bull this year and it's like, man, I'm at 75 and I don't want to jinx myself.
Yeah.
Like I'm not saying I'm great. I'm still learning a lot. I still have a ton to learn about elk hunting. I've just been very lucky in the 4 years I've been doing it.
Well, congrats, man.
Thank you.
Now you said Haynes a couple times. All right.
Yes.
Do you practice as much as he does?
Man, I wish I could. I do my best to shoot my bow every day, but there's just some days for me, life gets in the way. I want to, I wish I could. Like, I mean, that guy he's an animal when it comes to bow hunting. I mean, you being a ultra marathon runner, I don't know if you've met him or not, but just that guy's workout routines and just the things he does, man, that he's an incredible athlete.
For sure. Yes. Just knowing the terrain that he runs and dominates it. And I'm pretty sure he has to be dominating hunting as well. So, I mean, no matter what he does, he's just full tilt 24/7.
Yeah. I mean, he puts all of his energy. I mean, he even says it like all of his training, all of his running, everything else
for hunting
is just to make him a better bow hunter.
Yeah.
And that's something else that I never really took into consideration. I mean, when I quit fighting bulls, I didn't really see any reason to keep myself in my peak physical shape.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I kind of let it go a little bit. And then once I started listening to him and watching him, like it made me realize like, you got to get back into your peak physical shape. Like the mountains aren't really something to mess around with. Like a lot of people probably really don't take it into consideration, but there's so many things that could go wrong on the mountain. You got to be in good physical shape.
It's true. It's true.
So, it was actually just in December. I went and started up a gym membership again and I've been going 5 days a week and if I've had the success I've had at this point in the shape I was in then, man, I can't wait to see what this year holds for me.
Good, man. Well, congrats. When you do want to hit mountains, I'm not Cameron Haynes, but I know my way around Oregon. I've tackled many, many mountains there. Just give me a call. I'll be there the next morning. Yeah. I will be there.
That sounds good. Well, once I'm there, I'll let you know. You just tell me where we're going.
Did you hear Tucker Williamson episode? Tucker Mack.
I don't think I finished that one yet. I think I started it.
Well, you talk about peak physical, you know, ability and everything else. When I asked him how he keeps in shape on the podcast, he was busy playing video games, right? But he was answering everything.
Yeah.
All he said, he doesn't have to work out. He just drinks Mountain Dew.
Man, I wish.
Yeah.
So, sorry. My new workout routine, like, I mean, obviously I'm not Cameron Haynes. I never will be.
Right.
But my workout routine, I go to the gym. Typically I'll get to the gym at 4:30 in the morning. I'll lift for half hour, 45 minutes, and then I'll take off. I typically run no less than 5 miles, and then I'll go to work at 6:30 and finish out my day that way. So that's kind of the routine I try and keep. There's some days that I'll skip the gym and just go for like a 7-8 mile run, just because for me, I think cardio is probably honestly my biggest asset in the mountains, is keeping a good cardio system. So
you're 15-20 miles out from Medford, correct?
Yeah, roughly. Yeah. I live in the mountains around here.
Yeah.
So and that's the best part. I mean, my new passion is right in my backyard.
Yeah. I pass through there a lot, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, 5 minutes from home and I'm in the elk woods.
If you ever get bored though, you always have to do flat top, both of them in one day, or when you're training, do flat top in Medford. I do that. I do both when I visit down there with my buddy. All the time. Yeah. So when you get bored.
Maybe next weekend.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. After next weekend, spring bear season starts April 1st. And I drew my tag again for the fourth year in a row. So
you're getting lucky, man. That's lucky. That's lucky.
It is. It's very lucky. Cause I know people that, I mean, my boss right now, he has one or two bear points right now, and he didn't draw. But so the way the draw system works, like if you draw your tag, you lose all the points you had accrued at that point. So I've drawn my spring bear tag every year with 0 points.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But he's got points and he didn't draw. So, I mean, I've definitely been lucky with that for sure.
Man, that's lucky. With all the laws and everything though, man, it's just like, I hate it.
Oh yeah. It's definitely difficult. Like I don't know why, but I mean, hunters get a bad name. They get a bad rap. And I've never understood why. I probably never will.
Mm. Yeah.
But I mean, it's not like we're just out there. We're not bloodthirsty killers. I mean, we have so much respect for these animals, and like, bow hunting for me, like once I get into that 40 yards or less range, like I feel a connection to that animal that I'm hunting because I've been smart enough and elusive enough that I'm basically one of them.
Right.
So like, I feel a total connection with these animals that I hunt. And I mean, you are taking a life, and that's not something that I would ever take lightly, but I mean, it's no different. You go to the supermarket, you buy your meat, and I mean, that still comes from an animal that's still alive. So it's
of animals that law pass or that bill pass about exotic animals. They're stopping rodeos. Did you see all that on social media?
I haven't seen that yet.
Oh yeah. The Oregon and California were trying to pass a law or a bill stating you can't take exotic animals across state lines. And so that would stop, you know, the bulls and all the other stuff.
I hadn't caught that one yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Check it out. Wonder if it did. Probably, hopefully it didn't, but man, it's crazy, dude. The laws, it's crazy. And if I want to go hunting down there, you know, especially in Oregon, it's going to cost me a couple grand. It's crazy.
For an out of state license and tag, it's ridiculous. I didn't realize, because I mean, I've lived here my whole life. I didn't realize how expensive it was for somebody from out of state. And I was talking to a friend it's been about a month, I guess, talking to him about coming over here for elk season from Wisconsin. And he looked at it and he goes, man, that's going to cost me a ton of money. Like, I'm going to have to take a couple years and save up for this.
Serious. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
So when's your next event, man? When are you going to hit up an event, CCT, rodeo, what?
That's a good question. I mean, like I say, a lot of my weekends are spent. I spend as much time with my family as I can. And yeah. we've got some animals here at the house. It's hard to get away, but I'm going to try and make it to more of the CCT events this year. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like we talked about in the beginning, it's hard for me to be a spectator.
I got you.
So, I mean, it'd be one thing if I was going to kick latches or pull gates or something like that. But as a spectator, it's hard for me to just go sit and watch. I mean, I enjoy cheering for the kids, all the guys. I mean, but it is hard. It is tough.
Will you be advertising the junior bulls or the junior rodeo when it comes up?
Yeah. Yep.
When you do, I'll end up showing up. Hopefully you're there to watch.
No, I'll be there. I mean, as a vice president, I got all kinds of roles to fill at the event itself.
Okay.
So, and I'll be, I don't know. I'll have to look at the CCT schedule again and I'll let you know which ones I think I'll make it to.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me know, man. In the Prineville, I hung out in the beer garden.
Yeah.
But man, it's so cool to see those kids just be on the side doing their thing and just, you know, wait until they ride, man. It's cool to see their personality. And, you know,
there's no two of them that have the same warm-up routine as another. Yeah. I mean, they all have their own routines and it works for all of them, but you'll never see two of them that are identical.
Yeah.
So, and I believe our junior rodeo is August 20th this year.
August 20th. Okay.
Yep.
All right. That's not cross country season. So I can pull that off.
Perfect.
In that, the vice president, what is the end goal for that? What would you like to see in the near future?
In the near future, you know, I'd like to see this junior rodeo built back to where it was when I started. Because when I started, it was a 2-day event. And even then, I mean, it ran from 7 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night with all the events from all the rough stock, you know, the mutton busting, calf riding, steer riding, all the way through bull riding, all the roping events, the girls barrel racing and pole bending and goat tying. I mean, junior rodeos have a ton of events for these kids. It's not like your standard PRCA where you got barebacks and bulldogging and, you know, there's a ton of events for these kids.
Yeah.
So, and now, I mean, we're lucky to fill 1 day worth of events. Mm-hmm. So, my end goal that I would like to see by the time I'm done as a vice president, I would like to see it built back to where it was back then.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. What about Hunter? What's your end goal there?
Man, I don't know. There's the hunting industry. Like it's tough to call yourself a professional bow hunter. Cause I mean, the way I look at it, you're not really a professional until you're paid to do something.
Correct. And
hunting's not really something you're paid for. I mean, you got Cameron Haynes, Born and Raised Outdoors, another group from Oregon.
Yep.
You know, they have sponsorships and they have people that basically pay them for what they do. And that would be a good end goal for me, I think, would be to get some sponsorships like from Hoyt or just any of the equipment that I use and believe in. Like I use a EXO mountain pack. That's the pack I've ran since I started. And
okay.
That would be the end goal, would be to be able to call myself a professional bow hunter. But
yeah,
I mean, at the end of the day, I hunt to feed my family. I don't hunt for recognition. I don't hunt for anything like that. I enjoy sharing it with everybody. Like you said, my Instagram is all about hunting, but
yeah,
at the end of the day, I hunt to feed my family. I get my adrenaline rush out of it. Best case scenario, end result, I've got 300 pounds worth of elk meat in my freezer to feed my family for 5-6 months.
Okay. All right. The family end result. You going to have any more kids?
It's a tough question. She's pushing for another one.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Yeah.
Well, so we might. I mean, we have one of each, you know. We got, my daughter's the older one, my son, he's three, and we have one of each. To me, that's, how could it get any better? But, you know,
barrel racer, bullfighter,
barrel racer, bullfighter, bow hunter, you know, we got the whole package.
Yeah, that's cool, man. That's cool. But, all right. Well, did I miss anything? Anything you want to add?
I don't think so. I think we pretty well covered, honestly, more than I thought we would. So
yeah. Oh man, this isn't my first rodeo.
It's not my first rodeo, but it is my first podcast.
Yeah. And I appreciate you saying yes, man. I appreciate you. You know, we had the same idea, like, hey, you knew Roy, you were a bullfighter. You said yes. I was happy you said yes. And I'm like, you know what? Not every day.
I appreciate you reaching out to me. I mean, it's something I've wanted to do, but it's tough for me. I've never been really good speaking in front of, you know, a group of people or even just
great, man.
Somebody I don't know. So
you did great. You did better than I did. You did better than I did, man. So you're natural. A lot of people, you know, they get nervous. They're like, oh, I don't want to hear my voice. Dude, you got that podcast voice. You were set, man.
That's something I've kind of used Instagram for is, you know, I'll make some videos where I'm talking or doing something. You know, I think the biggest one for me a couple of years ago, or actually it was last year, I gave away a brand new bow that I had bought and just decided I didn't like. So I did a giveaway on Instagram, and that was where I kind of broke out of my shell and got to be more okay with hearing my own voice and speaking in front of people, I guess.
Well, here's this, man. When you get done with the bear season and you tag a bear, give me a call or, you know, hit me up on Instagram. Let's talk about it. I would love for you to come on. We'll talk bullfighting. We'll talk PBR. We'll talk anything, you know, everything you love, just so you can get more into it.
Hey, that sounds great.
Yeah. I'll tell you a story about born and raised. Okay. I frequent Klamath Falls. I went to college there, right? Mm-hmm. And I have family there. My little brother lives there, his family, whatever. And I went down there early in the podcast and interviewed Skyline Brewing, right? Yeah. And it was duck season. Well, didn't know the brewer who owns that land was brothers or cousin of Cody. And so we're doing the interview in the old 100 plus year old dairy, like the dairy parlor. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this guy, he had like this, I don't know. He knew, he had this swag and he knew what he was doing. And then come to find out it was Cody from Born and Raised. I was like, oh my God, I was starstruck, dude. I was like, oh my God, what are the chances? You know?
Oh yeah. No. And I mean, I haven't met any of those guys. I haven't met Cameron Haynes personally, but you know, they're guys that I look up to them.
Yeah.
Like they've been doing this for a long time. They're some of the best elk hunters in the world. And I try and pick everything I can, watch their videos, watch all their hunts, and just take everything I can away from them and improve myself.
Right. Well, that's all you can do, man. Just like those kids, they're learning from you. They're getting this opportunity because of you.
Yeah.
And paying it forward, man. Yep. And, but dude, like seriously, Wolfgang, man, that's just wild. Did people call you, do you have a nickname or they just say Wolfgang?
Most of the time, like my friends, like Roy, he calls me Wolfie, and there's a lot of my friends that have called me Wolfie forever, but I go by Wolfgang. Everybody pretty much calls me Wolfgang.
Okay. Wolfgang. All right.
Yep.
Well, man, you know, I appreciate your time, man. From what I know from bullfighting, hunting, family, and also being, you know, with those kids, the junior rodeo, man. Yeah, you're the unsung hero for these kids, dude. I myself work with kids, and you know, it's a treat to see them grow, you know. Yes. And you might not be in the dirt, but dude, you're part of it. And I just want you, to know, man, you know, I respect that. And one day you and I will sit down and watch people in the dirt and just have a good old time, if that's okay.
And I mean, honestly, I know now that I play a bigger part of it now as a vice president of a junior rodeo than I did when I was fighting bulls. I mean, that's what I live for, the next generation.
Yeah, that right there should get your adrenaline going too, man, because just seeing those kids get pumped, see the older guys, right? The older guys are older guys. They do what they do. They're good. But man, to see those kids, you know, those kids, even in track, run the mile or 800 or 100. And just at the end, they come in second before they came in, you know, seventh or eighth last, you know, and just to see them coming second and third and have a smile on their face, that's all that matters, man.
Yeah. I mean, when their heart is in something like that, especially at such a young age, I mean, it doesn't matter what you're doing, but when your heart is so into something, man, it doesn't matter to me what sport you're in, whether you want to rodeo or play football or baseball or whatever. Like when that's where your heart is and you're just 100% focused and driven, I mean, it's incredible to watch anybody grow up in any sport.
So keep that in mind when you're spectating or trying to, or even thinking about going to the next event. Okay. Please.
Oh yeah.
You're the man, dude. So anytime you want to hit the mountains, give me a call, especially Central Oregon. I know that area like the back of my hand. Just let me know.
I'll be this July. I'm headed up to Hoodoo for a 3D archery shoot.
Okay.
So, but yeah, no, we'll definitely have to get together and go do some hiking or run some mountains or even just sit down and hang out and watch a bull riding somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Just let me know, man. Roy knows I travel, so it's okay.
Yeah. Perfect.
Well, enjoy.
Hey, you know, Central Oregon, Roy's right there in Redmond. We could all get together and go run some mountains.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I would love to do that. That's nice. All right, man. Well, you enjoy your evening. Sorry I kept you, but
You're all good, man.
Had fun, man. Had fun.
So did I.
Tell the wife I said hello and thank you for your time. And yeah, man. Till next time.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon. All right.